Hi, welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 101 for July 22nd, 2007. Coming up in a few minutes.
Believe you me, in this world there are some terrible spirits, and I've drank most of them and suffered from some of them as well. but that's what I did, and it gave me I realized that back in Scotland, goodness, we make one of the better spirits in the world. And it gave me an interest in how it was actually made. You know, running a ship's engine room and running a distillery is not tremendously different.
That's Ian Henderson, the longtime distillery manager at Laphroaig and many other Scottish distilleries. He's now winding up his work on a new project, the English Whiskey Company's distillery at Rowdham. That's right, an English whiskey. I'll have more with Ian later, but first, let's look at the news. It's taken nearly a year, but the U.S. will finally be getting a taste of Benromics Organic Single Malt. The first certified organic whiskey has been available in the U.K. for a year now, but has just now been certified to carry the organic label in the U.S. Benromic is owned by Gordon and MacPhail, and if you've heard past episodes, you may have heard my conversations with Gordon and MacPhail's Michael Urquhart about the organic offering.
Everything's organic, including the casks, and really what's quite interesting, they're virgin casks, first time that any spirit's gone into them. The casks were made from trees cut down from environmentally managed forests in Missouri, casks made from that, and you get this lovely, deep, kind of walnut brown colour coming through. And the whiskey's only 6 years old. Really fantastic.
Now, if we could just get the health food stores to add a liquor section. A couple of weeks ago in episode 99, I talked with Chris Morris of Woodford Reserve about his limited edition Chardonnay finished bourbon. After that episode, it came to my attention that Buffalo Trace has also been experimenting with Chardonnay barrels. Earlier this year, Buffalo Trace master distiller Harlan Wheatley released two Chardonnay finished bourbons as part of his experimental collection. Both the 6-year-old and 10-year-old bourbons spent an extra 8 years in Chardonnay barrels. Both were released in very limited quantities, but you might still be able to track down a bottle. Last February, Diageo announced plans to build a new distillery at Rose Isle. Now the world's largest whiskey maker has submitted its proposal to local authorities for review. The $80 million facility could open as early as 2009 and will produce malt whiskey primarily for Diageo's blends. There's more construction planned in the Speyside area. Edrington Group plans to build at least 6 more maturation warehouses at the McAllen Estate. Edrington's annual report for the fiscal year that ended June 30th shows the McAllen set a new record with more than 500,000 cases of whiskey shipped. That would make the McAllen the world's number 2 single malt in sales in the ongoing battle with Glenfiddich and the Glenlivet. Coming up on the calendar of events, the Glenlivet hosts a whiskey school for members of its Guardians of the Glenlivet Society, August 8th through the 11th. Whiskey Fringe takes place in Edinburgh the week of August 18th. Australia's Malt Whiskey Convention takes place in Melbourne, August 24th through the 26th. The Köpenicker Whiskey Herbst in Berlin is the weekend of September 7th. And the Kentucky Bourbon Festival runs from September 12th through the 16th in Bardstown. Of course, there's a complete list of whiskey events at the WhiskeyCast website. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. One of the many classic lines from the Godfather movies could also apply to Ian Henderson. Just when I thought I was out, they pull me back in. Ian's retired 3 times, but distillery owners keep pulling him back in. His latest assignment caused a bit of controversy, though, helping set up the English Whiskey Company's distillery south of the Scottish border. The Scotsman headlined its story, "Sassenach Steals Scots Malt Genius for New Distillery," and did everything but accuse Ian Henderson of treason.
I don't know how people have come up with that idea. I've worked for many companies in the world. I've even worked for an American oil company. What does that make me? I used to work for Mobil Oil as an engineer on their ships. So I don't know how you would say it, a traitor just coming south of the border to make whiskey. But it doesn't bother me. I'm going home to Scotland soon, so I'll get a lot of stick when I go home. So I'll live with that.
Tell me about this distillery, because this is a completely new project almost, correct?
It is. It's been, it's the brainchild, I suppose, of a family called Nelstrup, whom you've probably seen on the website. Have you looked at their website, have you?
Yes, I have.
The Norfolk Whiskey Company. Well, it's a father and son team who put the distillery together, and it was designed and built in Scotland, and then brought down here like a Meccano set, and it was all built and put up in 6 weeks. We started making whiskey last November, that's November 2006, and we are still in production to this, at this moment in time. It's a small distillery, it's only two stills. It will make about 90,000 litres a year in a 46 working week in a year. The spirit is absolutely superb from it. It's a light-bodied spirit, but it's made with very hard water, which, I mean, I've never made whiskey with really hard water like this. It's about 350 parts per million of calcium hardness, which, is really hard in comparing that with water in Scotland. I mean, hard water distilleries in Scotland would be Glenmorangie or Milton Duff, and maybe Glenburgie. But there's 42 breweries in Norfolk and Suffolk, and they can all make good beer, so why can you not make whiskey?
Now, what is that going to do to the taste with such hard water?
Well, the brewers, because I've been running a few of the breweries, the brewers tell me that's where they get their sweetness from, because the whiskey is incredibly sweet. And I'm not convinced of that. I mean, because brewers they make designer waters, you know, using reverse osmosis and things like that, whereas we haven't done anything like that. The water's from a borehole, you know, deep, 30 meters deep down in the ground. And it's a chalk aquifer, which tends to make the water quite hard. But it makes absolutely super whiskey. And before I came here, I told the family that you never can tell what it's going to turn out like, because this is my third distillery I've been involved in where it's brand new. And this is probably, spirit-wise, this is probably the most successful one. The others were much bigger, of course, bigger units, but they weren't instant success like this one has been. At least that's my opinion.
And you've still got a couple of years before this even really becomes whiskey, correct?
Absolutely, yes. We've got to go to 2009 before it can be called whiskey, and because it's the same, it's a 3 year, it's what we call British plain spirit up to then, up until the 3 year maturation period.
And it'll be called British whiskey after that?
It'll be called English whiskey after that.
Okay.
That's what they've called themselves, the English Whiskey Company, although it's in Norfolk, they've taken the name of the English Whiskey Company.
Now, what did you think when they called you up after you left Edradour?
Well, I'd met them before I left Edradour. I mean, I knew of them, and I'd given them some help and figures and facts and things before that. And I agreed to come down here for a period of time to get it off the ground. In 2006, I really planned to retire at the end of that year. But who knows? I mean, there's quite a few new small distilleries popping up everywhere. I mean, there's another one in the north of England, which hasn't got off the ground yet, but who knows, it might do. And where I live in Scotland, there's two small distilleries being built. Well, one's built and one's being built as we speak. So who knows? This might be my last job, and it might not be.
I know that there was some discussion that you're actually looking for your successor to take over this distillery, right?
No, I've got my, I'm training my successor at the moment.
Okay, because I know there was a discussion, or at least something on the website, that you were looking for applicants to take your job.
That's right. Yeah, we did. We've managed to recruit a brewer from a local brewery, who's obviously au fait with the chemistry, if not the plant. But he's training, you know, as I'm speaking to you. So in 6 or 8 weeks, I'll be going home to Scotland to play with my train set.
Tell me about your history here, because you've been in this business a long time, right?
This is my 14th distillery I've worked in. I suppose I've been 38 years making whiskey. But I'm an engineer by profession. I mean, I was a marine engineer before I came into this business. And I trained as a steam locomotive engineer. And then I went to the Merchant Navy. Sailors enjoy a drink from time to time.
No.
So, when we were on, when we were go abroad and to different places, I'm not a beer drinker, and most of the guys used to go and drink beer, but I used to go and try some of the spirits of the different places we went to. And believe you me, in this world there are some terrible spirits, and I drank most of them and suffered from some of them as well. but that's what I did, and it gave me I realized that back in Scotland, goodness, we make one of the better spirits in the world. And it gave me an interest in how it was actually made. Now, running a ship's engine room and running a distillery is not tremendously different. Okay, one's the end product's different. I mean, one's a rotating shaft and the other's something you can drink. And on one voyage, one trip I came home and I got married, and the first thing you do when you come home and leave is your wife shoves the situation vacant column under your nose. And one of them was chief engineer in a whiskey distillery. And that, thank goodness, that has to be the best of both worlds. So that was at Bunahavon on the island of Islay. And that was my introduction to the whiskey industry as an engineer. And I moved from there to Glenlivet, to the valley, to up the Dufftown area where all the distilleries are. And I moved into the production side of the actual market, and it gave me an interest in spirit, you know, and particularly new spirit. I'm a whiskey maker, if you like, rather than all these fancy titles that people talk about, master distillers and things like that. There's no such thing as a master distiller, but there's whiskey makers, and I'm one of them. And I'm probably, I'll be 70 this year, so I'm probably one of the oldest ones. The old codger, they call me.
And you went from Glenlivet to where?
I worked in most of the Chivas distilleries up in the Tree Valley, and then I went down to a distillery called Bladnoch, down in southwest Scotland. And I then went back to Islay, to Lafroig and Ardbeg. Then I went from, when I retired, I was forcibly retired at the age of 65, and I went to Edradour, and I was 3.5 years at Edradour, and then I came down here. So I've made a few drams in my time at all these different distilleries. But everyone is different. They've all got their own characteristics and little idiosyncrasies that make them different. And I think that's what makes the fascination of it all. Because, I mean, malt whiskey is one of the most complex drinks in the world. And, I mean, you know that no two distilleries give you the same spirit. And they can be right alongside each other. And for some peculiar reason, you get these variances. And I think it's the variances that make them attractive. And I consider myself to be quite fortunate that I've had the opportunity to move from one distillery to another, sometimes within the same company, but sometimes not. I've moved for experience and Most distilleries in Scotland are situated in attractive places, so my family think they've always lived in attractive places. In fact, I've got a son who was 28 yesterday, and he's now an operator back at Glenlivet, and that's where he was born and brought up. How's that for a coincidence?
That's keeping it in the family.
Well, in a way, he's the only one. I've got three boys, and he's the only one that's in the industry. And my other two boys do other things, but it is uncanny how he ended up back at Glenlivet, where he was born, and lived as a little boy and went to the school there. It never ceases to amaze me that's where he's ended up.
What's the most enjoyable part of this whole business?
Speaking as an old age pensioner about to retire for the third time, the fact that I like running plants, and I like the lure of the unknown, and I like creating things that are going to give people pleasure. I think that's where the job satisfaction comes in. Doing a job well gives you job satisfaction. And you can get that from making whiskey, because there are some dull jobs in the world, isn't there? And this is definitely not one of them.
What would you change if you had one thing to do over again and you could go back and change it? What would you have changed?
Do you mean as a person, or do you mean...
In the business. What would you go back and... One area where you think, boy, I wish I could go back and do that right this time, or go back and fix something and do it differently?
Fix something differently, yeah. Goodness. That's a difficult one. You have favourites in your portfolio, you know, of experience and of whiskies. And I mean, I've got three favourites, and I might have made one or two changes at Blaenoch when I was there. Had the money and the authority to do them. I found Blaenoch fascinating because when I went there with my wife, the place was run down. It was broken down, in fact, the night I went there. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, I had to get a boiler suit on and go and sort the boiler before we could get going. And Blaenoch's always going to be special to me because of the impact it had on my life, I think. And the fact that it was away from the head office. I mean, it was several hundred miles from the people who owned it, which at that time were Bells, and then it became Diageo, and they really didn't want it. And if I'd had the wherewithal, and I would maybe have bought that distillery, if I'd had the financial guile, if you like, but I didn't. And Blaenoch as a whiskey is always going to remain one of my favourites in that respect. If that answers your question.
That's a really good answer to it. I know I'd spoken with one of your colleagues, John McDougall, who I guess has worked at some of the same distilleries you have over the years.
He has, yes. John, I followed him. He was at Lefroy at one time.
I know he told me once that the one he'd like to do over again was changing the stills at Lefroy.
Changing the stills?
He tweaked the stills at Lefroy when he was there to make a slightly different spirit, and I guess he told me he sort of wishes he'd had that to do over again.
I tweaked him as well after him. Yeah, when I went there, they weren't running in balance, really. It wasn't a balanced still house because we had three wash and four spirits. And it was really the equivalent of five spirit stills. And they were having blank runs and things like that there when I was there. I think the still house was expanded after John left. I'm not sure about the timing of it, but because Lefroy, of course, was owned and run by a woman for many, many years, the famous Bessie Williamson. But I thought I left it in good hands, and it's still producing good spirit. Because I mean, my flag is selling quite well at the moment.
I just wanted to ask one last question. It's sort of the question I've asked a lot of people over the years in this business. That one last dram a few years from now, what would you pick out of everything you've worked with and everything you've tasted? What would you pick for that one final dram?
One final dram? Well, as I told you, I've got three favorites. And these are the distilleries that I worked at for however, my longer, probably either 17-year-old Ladnock or 10-year-old Lefroy. From 10-year-old Lefroy from number 7 warehouse is, and that the whiskey in number 7 warehouse, at 8 years, that whiskey was absolutely superb. And I would have bottled it at 8 years, but of course the marketing people have to keep it 10. Because that's just the way they are. They don't want to change. I mean, Lefroy has a narrow range of products. Even today and under Jim Beam. So that's what I would probably say would be my last dram out of that warehouse. I mean, Lefroy literally makes whiskey on the beach. I don't know if you've ever been there, but the waves splash against the warehouse walls there, which Isle is a unique place. It's almost like Shangri-La. it really is special. It takes a long time. Once you've worked and lived there, it takes a long time to go over it, because I don't know if I'll ever get over it, you know.
By the way, his new distillery will open a visitor center soon. While members of the Tartan Army probably won't be stopping by, the rest of the world is welcome. There's a link to the English Whiskey Company's website at the Whiskey Cast website. Finally, I'd like to thank the editors of Wired Magazine. I'm not sure which one of them is the whiskey lover in the bunch, but apparently there is at least one. They were kind enough to include Whiskey Cast in the playlist section of the August edition with some kind comments about the show. That's all for this episode of Whiskey Cast. My email address for questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com. Whiskey Cast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2007, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.